I'm Geethi House from WingedHearts.org, and today I'm interviewing Peter Richards and Gabriel Freebie from the Long Grass Refuge Centre in Gatton, Queensland, Australia. Peter and Gabby have been looking after cockatoos, rescuing and rehabilitating them for the last 7 years. And they have a lot to say about cockatoos and looking after them and giving them a healthy life. Peter, you have likened the life of a cockatoo, a pet cockatoo in a cage, to that of a dead bird walking. Can you explain to me what you mean by that?
Now, cockatoos have got a lifespan that's very similar to humans. So, you know, they can live for 50 or 60 years. And the average cockatoo is locked in a small cage where it can't even extend its wings for 30, 40, 50 years. And to my mind, that's equivalent to someone being on death row and locked in a cell in solitary confinement. It's no life for a person and it's no life for a bird.
So how wide is the wingspan of a cockatoo?
Probably around about a little bit less than a metre.
So they need a fair amount of space to sort of stretch their wings and stretch their muscles and also move around and fly, because otherwise they are just confined to a still and static life. How do cockatoos live in the wild? What do they do with themselves generally?
Well, cockatoos are a flock bird. They're very social. They live in large flocks. They spend a lot of time flying around, covering huge distances. You know, they might cover 30 or 40 kilometres in a day for their territory. They spend a lot of time grazing on the ground, digging holes, digging up roots, eating seeds. They don't spend their days sitting on a piece of wood.
And how did you happen to start rescuing and rehabilitating cockatoos? What got you started in that area?
Well, Gabby and I look after quite a lot of different sorts of animals. And somebody bought us a cockatoo that needed to be rehabilitated to be released in the wild. It was a wild caught bird and was about 2 years old and had been raised from a chick. And we did successfully rehabilitate that and release it. Once we got that one bird, knowing that they're very social animals, we eventually got more during the time that one was being got ready for release. And since then, we've just always had 3, 4, 5, or 6 birds on the way through. And now the birds that we have are all essentially unreleasable. They're old, retired birds.
Gabby, you were telling me earlier that although you started the aviary as a rescue and rehabilitation for cockatoos, you found that you're getting more surrendered birds. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, basically, having a cockatoo is, you know, it's a lifetime commitment. They have the same lifespan as an adult, as a human being. So what happens is people get them, you know, when they're starting their families, they'll get a bird as a pet, have it for 20, 30, 40 years, and then both of those people die. The children generally don't want to know about their parents' pets, and they'll either find a home for the bird or have it euthanized. So, you know, we get requests probably every couple of months for birds that have nowhere to go, that have lived in cages, tiny little cages, all of their lives. The children don't want them. So, you know, they're a legacy bird, and people need to realise they need to make provision in their wills as well as giving them a quality of life, not just having them in a very small cage for 30 years in solitary confinement.
So what are the problems that you found the birds suffer from? Tell me the story of Charlie Boy and how he came to you and how he is now.
Charlie Boy came to us about 5 years ago. He was 37 years old and had spent his whole life in a small cage. His feathers were in very poor condition. He had a swelling on his one leg caused by a poor diet. His feet were arthritic and he couldn't fly. In fact, he was in a very sorry state and we didn't really expect him to live that long. Charlie now is in fantastic condition. He still doesn't fly. He can fly if he's pushed, but it's uncomfortable for him. His feet are still a little uncomfortable, but he is now really quite a content bird. Some of the problems that people find with caged birds are you know, the feet, the wings, the feathers, but also the personalities. Being locked up for your whole life makes birds want to bite when someone comes near them. So they scream. Cockatoos normally scream when they're healthy and active. So they scream, but they bite. And a cockatoo bite is a very painful thing.
So people fear their pet birds sometimes, or the birds of their parents that they inherit. But in reality, the bird is just upset and frightened and tense and stressed out from really being given a very unnatural life.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have Charlie Boy and basically all of the old birds that we've been bought have been described to us as unhandleable, that you can't touch them, they bite, they're aggressive, they're vicious. But they're all, without question, after just a few weeks, they respond to being in a large area and having some social activity and being treated well. And they're all easy to handle. They don't bite. They're not vicious.
Yes, well, we've just been on a walk around your aviary. And the way Peter and Gabby have set up the aviary, the birds who can't fly, they can walk around a large area without having to stress their wings because they've been cramped for so long, their muscles have not developed properly, and they're unable to fly. And you were telling me about Irene and Croc and how they came to you. Can you tell me a little bit more about them?
Well, Irene and Croc had both, they were again surrendered birds. They'd spent 35 years, each of them in a separate cage. The cage is about 750 millimetres square, not even big enough for them to spread their wings. And they had never in that whole time been out of that cage. Now, the people who brought them to us, the children of the owners who had died, said that they couldn't even transfer them from those cages because they were vicious and they were very unhappy birds. We cut the sides out of the cages and left them in the aviary just in case they wanted somewhere as a refuge. And Croc left the cage immediately and has not been back. And he's now a very happy bird who lets me scratch his head and he chatters and he's very content. Irene is even more content. She goes back into her cage occasionally just as somewhere to sit, but she comes up and rubs up against me and, you know, is really a very friendly bird. And they're both much, much happier now that they're not locked away in those little boxes.
And you were telling me about Charlie Boy's love story. Even though he can't fly, he has a sweetheart.
The Charlie Boy we knew wouldn't be able to be released, but we have had another bird who could fly, name of Mick, and she, the intention was for her to be rehabilitated and released, but Charlie and Mick fell in love and they are never apart. Even though Mick can fly, she will not leave. We let them out, they wander around the garden whenever they want to come out. Mick will fly up into the trees, but she always comes back, and Charlie and Mick spend their whole time together, preening each other and doing activities together. And we liken part of Charlie's the fact that he now looks so well is because he's now got someone to do his washing and ironing.
Well, that is a beautiful story because it shows how even birds who have spent their life in isolation, given half a chance, can form relationships and really have a nice time, even though they may still be unable to fly.
Yeah, it's that quality of life. And when you liken their intelligence to round about a five-year-old child, they've got the ability to reason and feel, and they're just another animal like we are, and we should consider those emotions and needs that they've got.
And they are very, very intelligent, very communicative animals, because cockatoos can be taught to speak, and Charlie Boy and Charlie Girl both talk. And they come down to talk to other birds and to human beings. And sometimes people misinterpret that and think that because a bird is human-friendly, the bird wants to be in a cage. But a bird never wants to be in a cage, in my experience. They want to actually fly around and live a full bird life.
So it's a life in captivity. And, you know, unless you have a very good, big, generous, natural facility with earth floor, you shouldn't contemplate keeping an animal like a cockatoo, because, you know, the convenience of a concrete floor is there for the human, but the facility needs to be built for the bird and to stimulate the bird and to give it the freedom and flexibility to be a healthy animal and a happy animal.
So what do the cockatoos do on the ground, and what kind of facility do they need on the ground for themselves?
Well, cockatoos spend a lot of time digging holes on the ground. Quite often they nest on the ground. They'll dig a hollow under a log or under the root of a tree. They'll lay their eggs in that hollow. And a lot of their time during the day, the birds in our aviaries, they dig holes in the ground, they burrow under logs, they dig up roots, they dig up insects. They do eat a few insects. They find bits of wood, they chew on things, it wears down their beaks so that they don't end up with overgrown beaks. And generally, they just amuse themselves and keep themselves happy.
So what are the problems that a bird, a cockatoo that has been confined to a small cage, what are the kind of problems they suffer from in their physical condition and their emotional condition?
Well, I guess one of the things that's, you know, really important that we look at, first of all, is just the environment itself. Peter spoke about their behaviour in the wild, the grazing, the digging, the variety of grasses and barks and seeds and branches that they chew and eat. Life in a cage is on a tin floor because it's convenient for the human to clean out the poop every day. A handful of wild bird seeds, which is a high percentage of sunflower seeds, very fatty, very high in oil, and leads to fatty liver and other associated health problems.
Yes, you were likening it to someone being on a chocolate diet.
That's
if
exactly
all they're
right,
getting
yeah.
to eat.
Really, sunflower seeds should be a treat, and they should, you know, a few a day is a treat is appropriate, and birds in captivity should really be fed a diet of parrot pellets, which are nutritionally balanced, rather than seed, because they pick out the chocolate seed, like sunflower seeds, and leave the healthier ones behind. And it just, there just isn't the variety. You know, they need branches to chew. Apart from, you know, their physical muscles atrophying because of lack of movement, it's just the sheer brain-deadening, mind-numbing boredom of sitting on one little perch, looking into nothingness all of the time and waiting for someone to walk past you and say, "Hello, cocky." These are intelligent animals and they deserve a lot better.
So what kind of foods should they be given besides parrot pellets? Can they eat vegetables and fruits?
Yeah, definitely. They need a very high percentage of raw food. So corn, spinach leaves, snow peas, carrots, apples. What else?
Well, anything that yeah. you happen to have, yeah. basically. And that's why when they're on the ground, they're digging up roots and bits of grass and everything else. They're getting a whole variation in their diet that changes through the year. Whereas, you know, bird seed is the same day after day after day after day.
Yes, and you were also mentioning to me about the fact that they really needed something to chew because of their beaks. Now, what happens to their beaks if they don't have something to chew?
Well, both their beaks and their claws, if they don't have the ability to scratch and chew, their claws grow too long and their beaks grow too long. And once their beaks grow too long, they find it then difficult to eat. And it gets uncomfortable for them. It's like having, you know, impacted wisdom teeth.
And what about the kind of perch they have to sit on? Because they have big claws, they have big feet. What is the best type of perch to provide for a cockatoo?
They need a variety of sizes for a start, so they can flex their feet from small through to large. Square perches are just absolutely dreadful. They also need a bark covering on the perch so that, you know, that instead of just a raw piece of wood, they should be changed regularly with different sizes so that they can grab and chew and flex their feet and their muscles stay healthy.
And what about their feathers and the impact on the feathers of metal cages that are too small for them to spread their wings in?
Well, when their feathers rub up against wire mesh, they damage the ends of the feathers. So even if the bird were in a cage that was large enough for them to fly, they generally wouldn't be able to fly because of the damaged feathers, the tail feathers and wing feathers. So they really need to be in a cage where they're not constantly rubbing up against the wire.
And you were talking about wire mesh on the floor that some cages have and the impact of that on their claws.
Well, the same as with the feathers. You know, people have mesh on the bottom of their cages so that they can take the metal bottom out to clean it without the bird getting out. Now, that means that every time the bird gets down on the ground, its feet and feathers are up against wire mesh. And it's, you know, you can imagine if you were barefoot and that's all you had to walk on was wire mesh, you'd soon become very uncomfortable.
And these are some of the factors that actually contribute towards the animal and the bird, in this case the cockatoo, becoming quite grumpy and stressed out and then not as human friendly as their owners would like them to be.
Well, that happens quite a lot because once the birds start biting, as Peter said before, it's very painful. They have a very strong beak. Generally, people then are too frightened to handle them. So that then is more of a sentence, because whereas before they may have had some human interaction, maybe they had a perch they could come out and sit on or something, once they bite somebody once, generally that's the total end, and they never ever get out that door, ever. And it's even more soul-destroying and mind-numbing and boring for them. And they just become more vicious, and every bird that we've had here that we've told they're vicious and bite and everything else, we've proven over and over again that it's an environmental disease, it's not a bird-related disease.
Yes, and while we've been talking, we have got little Charlie girl over here who has been sitting with Peter. Now, she's just come here recently, and she's just had a hernia operation. Peter, can you tell us a little bit more about Charlie girl? Because she absolutely adores you.
We don't know a lot about Charlie girl's history, other than that she is 55 years, well, she is older than 55 years. She was in a cage with an old couple who died for at least 55 years. When the couple died, the children gave Charlie girl to a wildlife care group and said, find her a home or put her down. And they found her a home, but cockatoos take great delight in screeching very loudly, particularly early morning and late afternoon. And it's not really suitable in an urban environment. And the lady who took her realised quite soon that she couldn't keep such a noisy bird in her city garden. So she passed Charlie Girl on to somebody else who then passed her on to us. And at the time, she had a huge hernia on her belly that was, when we got her, it was about the size of a golf ball, and after a few weeks had grown to the size of a chicken's egg. And Charlie had that operated on by our local vet 10 days ago and is recovered quite well and will soon be back out in the aviary.
But in the meantime, because she's got the collar on so she doesn't take her stitches off, she can't groom her feathers. So she's looking very muddy and dirty because she's not able to groom. But Monday her two-week appointment's booked, and she should be getting the collar off and the stitches should be all healed up, and she can go back and be free a bird as she probably ever will be in the very large facility we have. And she can go back to digging and projects and
and being out in the rain to get clean and grooming her own feathers, yes.
So what is the first thing a person can do if they've inherited a cockatoo and would like to keep it? What can they do to immediately improve the quality of life of the bird?
Well, the size of the cage is probably the most important thing, and the flooring under the cage. So, I mean, basically a cage has to be snake and vermin-proof, but the floor needs to be soil with grass growing on it and, you know, preferably live trees and things inside the aviary. And generally that's very difficult to achieve in a suburban backyard. You know, you can come close to it with a ready-built aviary placed on turf and maybe some pot plants in there, but it needs to be changed regularly. The perches need to be changed, it needs to be cleaned, and every day you have to bring in some new fruit and vegetables and communicate with the bird and give it something different to look at.
So when the bird comes to you, what is the first thing that you do?
First of all, we do assess their health, make sure that they don't have any, you know, there is a disease called beak and feather disease that we're very careful not to introduce to the animals we already have in care. And when Charlie Boy came, he looked suspiciously like he had beak and feather because he was in such poor condition. So we did actually have him tested, which is quite expensive. I think the test is about $200, to make sure that he didn't have the disease so that we weren't putting the other birds at risk. Once we've given them a health check, really, after that it's a matter of time, because, you know, they've got a lot of adjusting to do. They, you know, they've been locked up for 30, 40, 50 years, and all of a sudden they're free. They've got a very large facility with grass and roots and leaves and trees and logs and other birds. And in the beginning it's quite overwhelming for them. But because they are so intelligent, within a very short number of weeks they adjust amazingly, and their personalities revert back to a loving, you know, gregarious, you know, little workaholics they are too. They're always digging and whistling and doing something, you know, type of life. And it just is lovely to see that you can give them that quality of life when they've not had much.
Lots of people love cockatoos, and a lot of people do get them because they love their cockatoo. So the message, what would be your message to cockatoo lovers?
Well, I think first of all you need to really, really, really think very carefully before you get a pet cockatoo. If you're at the middle stage of your life, you have to think about what happens when you're no longer here and the bird is still alive, what's going to happen to it. You need to think about the environment you live in to make sure that, you know, you can keep the bird, you're not going to upset the neighbours and all this sort of thing, and that you really can commit. When you go on holidays, you have to find someone to look after them, and all those things need to be taken into consideration. If you've done that and you still want to have a cockatoo, then you need to be able to afford a good facility. You need to have the time to interact with them every single day. You can't just decide, I'm too busy this week, and no, I don't really feel like putting fresh fruit out or anything like that. It's a really big commitment. It's a bigger commitment in actual fact than children, because children will leave home and make their own families, even though they'll still have contact with you. This one won't ever leave home, and you're responsible for the whole of your life to that bird, and you should leave a legacy for the bird to ensure it has a quality of life when you're no longer around.
Yes, because the bird only has the human. The bird does not have anyone else to look after it or to talk to.
And, I mean, I would say anyone who loves cockatoos, don't buy one.
Yeah, well, because you're perpetuating the industry where, you know, some birds in captivity have a beautiful life and people commit a lot of time and effort and energy to make sure they have a really good time and they're stimulated. But unfortunately, the large majority of these birds have an awful life. Because the understanding is, you know, the pet shop information that's given across, it sits in a cocky cage and that's it. And this is what you feed it. And then it talks. So, you know, it really isn't a quality of life. And unless you're really able to give it that, please think twice and pass that message on to anybody that's considering getting a cockatoo for a pet.
Thank you very much, Peter and Gabby, for giving us an insight into cockatoo life and what we can do to help improve the quality of their lives and actually end a convict life for them.
Exactly right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Petey.